Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome, folks, to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider that brought the three of us, myself, David and Matt, all the way out to Indian Wells on a trip of a lifetime that is, for David and Matt, already a distant memory. For me, well, I'm still on that trip of a lifetime. You find me in a Miami hotel room. Since Indian Wells, I have been to Palm Springs and Las Vegas, and that's the end of the list. Just feels like more at this stage. Where in the world did we find you, David? Hello.
Solihull, Catherine. I've just felt very much like shouting, check you out with your list of places. But I went to Frankfurt, lost my luggage, arrived back in Birmingham, was reunited a day later with my luggage, and now I'm sitting in a little office in Solihull with the blinds drawn because it's not very nice outside.
Matt Roberts, where in the world do we find you?
You find me in Richmond in the UK, not in Virginia, like many of our listeners. But I have also been to Palm Springs and Las Vegas since Indian Wells. And yeah, it's very nice to see you both. The last time I saw you both involved slightly weird transport situations, I've just realised.
It did. It wasn't the goodbye after an epic two. It wasn't the goodbye that the trip deserved.
Or was
I don't
planned.
Think, was it?
No, because I said goodbye to Catherine at Vegas Airport. Well, she was going for a bus for one terminal and I was going for a bus for another. And we had a sort of very weird hug where I was still holding my suitcase and my golf bag and Catherine sprinted off to make
I just
the
sort
bus.
Of assaulted Matt. I was the only participant in the hug. And then I sprinted away.
And with David, we said goodbye at Palm Springs Airport in the middle of a big, hoo-ha, car mix-up.
David left us on the curb.
I dispatched your baggage into a bright red Ford Mustang, and then the realization hit. That convertible, the realization hit. And let me just get this in. Catherine looked really cool in the driver's seat. And then we realised...
I had 10 minutes of being cool, folks. 10 minutes. I got to drive a bright red Ford Mustang convertible in and out of the Avis parking lot in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
It was great.
And then Matt and I basically tried to waggle the contents of Catherine's luggage into a space that was not going to be able to fit the luggage.
It was actually an experience which I think sort of summed us all up, because Catherine was at one end of the spectrum like, I'm sure it'll fit. We'll get it in. It'll be great. David was like, you need a new car. And I was somewhere in the middle for a few seconds trying desperately to get the luggage in. But yeah,
trying to keep the dream alive.
Realizing we had no chance.
David's energy was really, I need to get away from these impractical children immediately. And he did. He was like, I've got a plane to catch, guys. Good luck. See you later. And he did catch that plane. And we did trade in our dream car for a very practical Jeep Cherokee.
Grey.
And off, grey, fittingly grey. A dream to drive, though. Took us all the way from, but well, it took us to Las Vegas. It took us to LA and back last Wednesday, where we just casually hung out at Pam Shriver's pad. How long ago does that feel, Matt?
A very long time. But it was one of the great days.
What did Pam think
one
of your game,
the great
Matt?
Days. I feel like I should answer that question.
Please do, please
because
do.
Because I see the conundrum Matt is in, because the answer to that is Pam was extremely impressed, as was I. And Matt's like, can I say that? Can I say that out loud on a podcast to lots of people? So I'll say it for you, Matt. Matt was on fire. Turns out, you know how tennis is all about matchups, David? Matt's game matches up with Pam Shriver's like a dream. Matt loves a low slice, it turns out, which is my absolute nightmare. I fall to pieces as soon as I see someone gearing up for a slice. My mum has a wicked backhand slice and I just fall to pieces.
You didn't like my slice.
But Matt
in Australia.
Likes the ball low, it turns out, and Pam Shriver's got, you know, one of the great slices, and they were playing in the rain, so the balls were heavy and staying extremely low, even lower, and Matt was just
bawling.
I was blown away, actually. Blown away. It was a high quality half an hour of tennis.
Pleasantly surprised.
She did, yes, actually say positively surprised.
Yeah.
And still gave me a lot of great coaching.
At one point she compared Matt's volleys to Martina Navratilova.
Okay, I mean, now this is getting a bit silly.
Turns out also that Matt is a great half volleyer. Did we know that, David?
I mean, he seemed to struggle with my dipping passing shots, but
we were, you know, decompressing afterwards on the long drive home to Palm Springs, and Matt said, "I've just always had the half volley. It's always come naturally to me."
Yeah, it really is for the best that I didn't describe my experience with Pam Shriver. I would have come
person?
Across terribly.
You should have seen him in Vegas, David.
Oh yeah. we're an open mic here, Catherine. Just talk away.
So people have tuned into this for. Can you tell Matt and I haven't watched a lot of tennis and we're stalling?
They'll be coming we're to me for Miami tennis updates
before the bit where we have to talk about tennis. Yeah, we went to Vegas. All feels like a dream now, doesn't it, Matt?
Oh, I mean, it kind of felt like a dream at the time, to be honest. And it certainly does now. What are we? I don't even know how many hours removed.
Did Taylor Swift live up to it, is the big question.
Oh.
Because my word, did I have to hear a lot about it ahead of time. It better bloody well have lived up to it.
Yeah. There was one podcast recording during Indian Wells where we interrupted live streaming Taylor Swift on TikTok to record the podcast. And David wasn't our biggest fans that evening. I think that would be fair to say.
It was another, I need to get away from these impractical, irritating
David,
children
who is always
moment.
Up last on podcast recording night, you know, just to oversee everything, took himself to bed early.
He said, I'm going to bed.
I did a Billie Jean.
You did.
I don't know what to say to people that say, how was the concert? I don't know what to say. There are no words. If someone asks me on text, I can at least try and express it in emoji form or send a video. But I simply don't really have the words to express how special it was.
I'll take that as a yes.
Absolutely
then.
Incredible.
Incredible, David.
I've seen the pictures. I'm not being a stick in the mud, folks. I was delighted for them. Glad that I wasn't there, but delighted for them.
It's all a bit of a whirlwind, really. Here I am in Miami. It looks lovely, but my heart is still a little bit in Las Vegas and Palm Springs, and at Pam Shriver's pad. And Indian Wells. So I will get into the Miami swing of things. I will. And part of that will involve leaving my hotel room, which is not something I've done yet. But at the moment, I'm still processing, David, as Americans would say. Processing all the many, many good things. I have watched quite a bit of tennis since arriving at this Miami hotel room, which I haven't left. So I do have some contributions to make. David will be making... In fact, Mark Knowles and Lindsay Davenport are currently on my screen talking about tennis on the Tennis Channel coverage. So I do have some contributions to make. Matt, have you been catching up a little bit over the last 24 hours since landing back in the UK?
Yep, I've been putting in the work today before I needed a jet lag sleep this afternoon. But... yeah, this does feel like the David show for his Miami takes. And we quite enjoyed experiencing David's Miami takes remotely. There were lots on Twitter that we saw coming through on a podcast account. There were some on our group chat. And then we noticed that maybe we weren't quite providing the back and forth that we usually do. And so David took his chat to our Alcarazmataz group with Catherine's brother, and he was watching. So I feel like maybe he should be on this podcast because, yeah, he's definitely seen more than I have. But, yeah, I've been doing some catching up, and it feels like there have been a lot of very good matches, and yet at the same time, a lot of the big names, big hitters are still left, and we're set up for, yeah, like a really good second week. It's been a pretty good sweet spot, I'd say, so far.
The Alcarazmataz chat was definitely the right place for you to go, David, because you found a kinship with Math on Dusan Lajovic hot takes.
Mm. Yeah, which weren't faring overly well at one point. I decided that Lajovic's incremental improvement against Alcaraz in their two previous matches over the last month, he played him twice, I think, in... Where was it? It was Rio, and was it... Where's the other tournament that they had? Buenos Aires. And he lost one of them 6-2, 6-4. He lost the next one, I think, 6-2, 7-6, something like that. And, you know, he was in there. He lost a 7-love tiebreak. But, I mean, you know, he was at least forcing a tiebreak. And I thought, oh, Lajovic has now beaten Andy Murray. He's then backed that up. He's beaten someone else. He's set up this match against Alcaraz. And I said on the Alcarazmataz group that I think that Lajovic might just push Alcaraz really closely. First set was 6-love Alcaraz, and at this point Math beat me to it by about 4 seconds just to own our combined failure to recognize that this might be a match, because Math also thought that I might not have come up with the worst prediction ever there. Fortunately, Lajovic somewhat...
He said, Lajovic is playing legitimately excellent level of tennis this year. Not such a bad shout, David.
Thank you, Math.
And then there was some chat about Lorenzo Sonigal's...
Sonigo.
Oh, dear. See? I've forgotten tennis.
Ask her anything about Taylor Swift.
Lorenzo Sonigo's musical side gig, which has revealed itself. Anyway, he was with you on Lajovic, David. Very much with you.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Lajovic, I think, has been poor the last year or so. He was better a few years ago, but... Just the last few weeks, he started to play, and then he forced this match into a tiebreak as well. But there's a feeling Alcaraz has got to where I think he needs to be now in his career, because he's winning matches uneventfully and unspectacularly by his standards. And whilst that's a bit of a shame, I mean, he beat Facundo Bagnis 6-love, 6-2, and it was a really dull match. It's really hard to believe that an Alcaraz match can be dull at all, But he just had so little to play against, and he was required to do so little that he didn't play that well, and he still won 6-love, 6-2. But this is what will separate him from being this flashy player who we all flock to see, who occasionally has a big week, to maybe being a serial winner, which ultimately is what I want him to be, because I think the sport is at its best when it has someone like that. And he's that good that he can do them both. That's what Federer at his best, Nadal at his best. I think increasingly there's a bit more of it in Djokovic as well, a bit more of a showier player than he used to be, albeit he still is going to be a percentages player. That is his sort of bread and butter. But Alcaraz loves the show. He loves to make people go wow in the crowd. But he also needs to be a serial winner to fulfill his potential. And I mean, there are only two matches, but there are another two matches that make me believe that that is on its way.
And he now, Alcaraz, plays Tommy Paul, with the winner of that match to then play Holger Rune or Taylor Fritz, which is, I love that section of the draw. I'm into all of that. It's a big yes, please from me.
Yeah, definitely. And if I can chip in with a take about something that I've seen in Miami, I'm going to use that opportunity, because I did watch Taylor Fritz last night against Denis Shapovalov. And it's quite an interesting matchup, because Shapovalov used to dominate it. He was 3-0 in that head-to-head, but Fritz has really turned it around in the last few years, and it kind of reflects the jump that he's made that Shapovalov hasn't, in a way. And just the difference between them. Fritz is a player who knows how to make the absolute best of his game and is a great competitor. And Shapovalov at the moment is a really tough watch, because he's getting very frustrated. He's very on edge. It doesn't look like the relationship that he has with his team, certainly during the match, is going to be conducive to playing great tennis. And he's kind of an error machine. And Fritz, I thought, gave a really interesting analysis after the match, where he said, coming into it, I thought that I would have to hit my forehand really big and serve really well. You know, those are always the keys. But he said, I didn't actually have to do those things, because all I really had to do was get the ball in, because Shapovalov was just so sort of ready to play attacking tennis and nothing else. And it wasn't working, so he was just hitting errors. But Fritz pointed out that he thinks against Rune it's going to be totally different, because Rune is starting to play well again, and, you know, he's going to force Fritz to come up with his best tennis. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think this is a really interesting section of the draw, and some tests for Alcaraz. You know, Paul can bring it. And then if he gets through that, Rune or Fritz will be tough matches. So, yes, big yes, please, to all of those.
It's a distinguishing feature of top players, isn't it, that they are tough to beat. That unless they're injured or ill, or there's something significant external going on, they're not going to beat themselves. You have to absolutely bring it to beat them. And that is absolutely not the case for Denis Shapovalov. He is not tough to beat. He might absolutely bring it, play his best and win, because we know how good his best can be. But players are walking on the court against him thinking, this guy is not tough to beat. I don't necessarily have to play my best today to get a look in. Okay, if he plays his best, then maybe that's going to be tough. But, you know, as all top players tell you, it's not about your top level, it's about your average level. And Shapovalov's isn't good enough. You know, I was sat in the lobby. I took a red eye from Vegas to Miami, which is just an overnight flight for people that don't use that terminology, which is usually me. But anyway, that's what everybody on my flight was calling it. And it landed at about 7 a.m., and I was at the hotel by 7:30 a.m. No, it landed about 6 a.m. Anyway, I was at the hotel by about 7:30, and there wasn't a room ready. So I had to spend a significant amount of time hanging out in the lobby of this hotel, looking, they must have been thinking, we need to get this woman a room because she is stinking up our lobby. We need to get this seemingly homeless person out of our lobby as soon as possible. I did not look pretty. Anyway, so I'm looking through the drawers. I'm thinking, I just need someone to check out of their room ASAP so that I can get a room. And I was thinking, oh, Denis Shapovalov will be checking out soon. And I said it as a joke, but I also, you know, it's becoming grimly predictable, isn't it? Anyway, I mean, let's move on.
Yeah, but it is true. And I mean, I think that they have shown themselves up to be, in that match, what they are. One is a professional who is maximizing his talent, and the other one isn't. And unless Shapovalov makes a big change to his approach, it's going to carry on.
Let's continue with the men's draw, seeing as we're there. So at the top, we have Alcaraz, Tommy Paul. Have those two played? If they have, I don't remember it.
No, neither do I. No, I agree with you.
Maybe I was in Vegas at the time.
A really fascinating combo, because Tommy Paul's almost become one of those players you have to beat now. I think Taylor Fritz is one as well at Grand Slam level. These are barriers to players with massive potential. I think Holger Rune will find it. How good are they? You know, and because Paul, you would expect, will bring a level. And whether Alcaraz is good enough on the day will determine.
They have played. They played in, I think it was Canada last year, and Paul won. And it was one of those results that really made me think that Paul had a way better season last year than he did have. Like, he did have a good season, but he didn't have anywhere near the consistency that he's showing already this year. And there's one of those strange stats going around that I don't even know why I'm bringing it up, because I don't particularly like it, that Paul always beats Spaniards. And he's won, like, all of his last 12 against Spaniards, which of course sort of means nothing, because they can all be a bit different. But for him, that does include wins over Nadal and Alcaraz. He's a tough match for Alcaraz, I think.
I'm glad Holger Rune is finding some form. I know we're only at the round of 16 stage, aren't we, in the men's? But it's still back-to-back wins, isn't it? He's beaten Martin Fucsovics, and he's beaten Diego Schwartzman. Because he's been okay this year, but it's not been what we expected when he won Paris at the back end of last year. And I know some of that is injury. He's had this wrist injury, which I think he sustained on court at the Australian Open. But I think whether you like him or don't like him, and I think it's completely legitimate not to like him, he's going to rub people up the wrong way. I do think tennis is better for him being there and being a challenger. So I'm really interested to see Rune against Fritz. Heading into the section of the draw below that, Botik van der Zandschulp last night beat Casper Ruud. I watched quite a lot of this. And by watched, I mean had it on in the background while I was multi-screening with the new series of Succession. It's been a really professional week for me and being a professional tennis broadcaster. But I think watching Ruud van der Zandschulp in any capacity is quite a commitment to being a tennis broadcaster, even in a multi-screen situation. Yeah, I don't think either of you watched it, did you?
No, you're right. They'd not be your first choices, would they, Catherine?
They would not be my first choices. Absolutely not. No. But it was all that was on, David. And, speaking of having a bad year, let's talk about Casper Ruud. Because obviously he was a finalist in Miami last year. That was his real hardcore breakthrough at the top level. That was his moment of, you know, proving the naysayers wrong, wasn't it? And by naysayers, I mean Nick Kyrgios. And so him failing so starkly to live up to that achievement of 12 months ago feels like a real benchmark of how not well his season is going so far relatively. Now, obviously, he'll be coming onto clay now, which must just be an alleluia moment in his mind. But he's also coming into a period where he has a lot to defend, not so much on the tour events, but obviously at the French Open, where he's got final points to defend. But It's funny, he won the opening set of this match against Van der Zandschulp. It was a competitive set, but he won it 6-3. And yet, he didn't look like a guy that was in control of a match. He looked really stressed and irritable to me. And I think that's why the match held my attention a little bit, because he just looked so not himself. Even after winning the first set, I still felt like he's really in danger here. It definitely doesn't feel like all is well in the world of Casper Ruud right now. I think he might be stressed about what he has to defend. He might be stressed about living up to next year. He might be emotionally at the end of his canister. We spoke to him after he lost in Australia and put him on the spot a little bit about the fact that he spent his off-season, or a large part of his off-season, travelling around South America, being an opponent for Rafael Nadal at the exhibitions down there. And he kind of said, didn't he, maybe on reflection, that wasn't the best thing for me to do with my off-season. And I think maybe he is still paying the price for that, and I'm a little bit worried about him.
Well, I think we're seeing a number of players now who had extensive off-seasons involving playing tennis, exhibitions, who are not delivering at these big events. Cameron Norrie is another one. He's obviously had some fantastic results, but he's played all the time. He's an admirable guy, as is Casper Ruud, as is Stefanos Tsitsipas, in terms of their output on the tour. They're always playing. They try their hardest. They're ultra pros in terms of preparation and playing matches, but they're losing a lot, and they're losing at the big events. They're winning a lot. Norrie's won a tournament. He's beaten Alcaraz, all the rest of it, but he's lost early in Miami. He lost halfway through, he lost in Indian Wells. I can't quite remember the stage. But it just feels as though these people are just burning themselves out a bit by playing too often. And they're fit enough, they're mentally into it enough that they can keep a level. But when you come to these biggest events and you need an injection, a turbo boost, it's not there. And it may not be cause and effect. It may be just coincidental. But I think there's something to it.
What has surprised me about Ruud is that he did actually take 5 or 6 weeks off after the Australian Open. Like, he didn't play at all in February. He came back in Acapulco and he still hasn't been able to get going at all. And to me, that now shouldn't be burnout. You know, he genuinely did have quite a big rest. I think he perhaps, as you said, had some reason to regret the off-season. He certainly suggested he wouldn't do that again. And I think we all saw that Australian Open non-run coming, really. But for him not to have kicked on in the last few weeks has been a bit of a surprise to me. He's lost to Taro Daniel, Christian Garin and Bortic van der Zandschulp. You know, just players that he had completely separated himself from last year. And, you know, you would expect him to just sort of take care of. I actually thought that there were some signs yesterday. I caught up on that match this morning just because I thought Casper Ruud would come up as a talking point, and felt like he was going after his shots again. The number of times, though, that he got in a good position in a rally and completely flunked a smash or failed to put away a volley, and including on match point, kind of staggered me. And I think, completely agree, Catherine, it seemed like he was stressed and in his own head and just short on confidence, I suppose, and that has manifested itself as this just inability to close matches. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't won back-to-back matches all season. He's outside the top 80 in the race. It's been a really bad start, and suddenly now there's some pressure on him to perform on clay. And I think maybe last year was probably, you know, might well end up being the best year of Casper Ruud's career, but I didn't expect him to come this short of matching it again. And now he's playing with a bit more pressure, a bit more expectation. It's a new scenario for him. So, yeah, I do think he'll be an interesting story to watch through the clay court season.
And see also rinse and repeat for Matteo Berrettini, who, you know, if Casper Ruud hasn't won back-to-back matches all year, Matteo Berrettini has barely won a match all year. He's lost to Mackenzie McDonald this week. Good player, but not someone with the weapons of Matteo Berrettini. You would expect Berrettini to be, you know, Matteo Berrettini of a year ago, 2 years ago, beats Mackenzie McDonald unless there's something going on. You know, he lost, Matteo Berrettini lost in a challenger during Indian Wells. He lost early in Indian Wells, didn't he? And then went on to play a challenger in
Phoenix.
Somewhere in, there we go, Phoenix, Arizona. I've seen that on some road signs recently. It is tough times for Matteo Berrettini just now. And I know he has nothing really to defend until the grass court season, and then not much to defend after the grass court season, really. But I feel for him. I do think, you know, we were joking about him being a cursed player at the start of the season, but now it just doesn't even feel funny anymore.
You can see his stress, Catherine, when he's playing. I watched the tail ends of the two sets against McDonald because they were both tie breaks. And it was one of those, it was an amazing day on, I think it was Saturday that match was played. It was just the most fantastic day where so many matches were going on all at the same time that I kept flipping between the match that had the tiebreak coming up, because there was sort of half a dozen of them in the space of a couple of hours. And I went over and I saw both of the tiebreaks that Berrettini played, and he looks the same. He looks like he normally looks. He's strong. He's hitting the ball incredibly hard. He's trying his heart out. There's no lack of application. It's just stress. It's just not there. There's no form there. So he's trying to force it. He's trying to make muscle memory happen before your very eyes. And it's just not quite there. And McDonald was doing all the right things because he was soaking it up, retaliating, counterattacking, making it difficult, and kind of making Berrettini misfire. And it is a tough watch because you know how much it matters to Berrettini, and I'm sure to Casper Ruud as well. But it shows how fine these margins are between a confident player who's in form and one who's not.
Yeah, absolutely tough watch at the moment. What else have we got in the men's draw? So Jannik Sinner is playing Andre Rublev later on today. I think of those two as very similar players. I know Sinner has more to his game. I think he's got tools that Rublev doesn't have. But from the baseline, I just feel like the stroke production and the way that they play from the baseline, it's that sort of, you always call it kind of video game style tennis, don't you, David? But generally, I think Sinner has the better of their matchups. And then going below that in the draw, there a lot of those, they're all around behind. So they're still at the round of 32 stage, so still a lot of shaking out to do. Daniil Medvedev still in the draw. He won his opening match and then got a walkover in the second match, so difficult to know whether he's really picking up where he left off from that run. Tsitsipas, I just watched some of, beating Christian Garin in three sets. Garin had the crowd heavily on his side. A lot of Chileans, a lot of Latin American presence in Miami. I still don't think Tsitsipas is fully fit. He still seemed to be suffering some discomfort in that right arm, certainly as the match wore on. To his great credit that he ended up winning it, but I still think he's not fully fit, and I'm not sure playing is the way to become fully fit. But hey, he's still in the draw. Good luck to him.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking. and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Moving on to the women's draw, where they are mostly, or I think entirely actually, at the round of 16 stage. I think we've had one woman win through to the quarterfinals already, and that is Martina Trevisan. She has already beaten Yelena Ostapenko today. Good win that for her. Good week for Martina Trevisan. But the rest of the quarterfinalists still to be decided. Oh no, Anna Potapova, she's through. She beat Zhongxin Wen, and she awaits the winner of the match currently on court between Jessica Pegula and Magda Linette. And it is a 5-love situation in Pegula's favour. She could do with a good week here, Pegula. She's not looked quite right. She's looked quite burdened, I think, in recent weeks. Still been doing a lot of winning, so well done to her. But she just, I mean, we know everything that's been going on with her mum, which has been very troubling for her, and she told us all about it in that Players Tribune article, so there's every reason for it. She just has looked burdened, I think, but five love juice, that's pretty good going against an Australian Open quarterfinalist.
Who beat Victoria Azarenka in the previous round in an absolute classic. This is the thing, there have been so many huge matches. I think you said it at the outset of the show that in isolation there have been loads of good matches, but not necessarily ones that will have a bearing on where the title goes, because Linette now might get beaten very comfortably in the end by Pegula. We had the same happen a couple of rounds ago with Yelena Ostapenko getting a win over Beatriz Haddad-Meier, and I watched some of that, and Ostapenko comes back from 3-1 down, wins 5 games in a row. It's just awesome hitting. And you're thinking, oh, maybe Ostapenko's about to go on a run. She plays Trevisan today and loses. Straight sets. And I only turned on at the end to hear the commentator go that Ostapenko would not have beaten a top 100 player today. And, you know, you sort of, I mean, I didn't watch it, so I can only go on that. But there's a lot going on every single day, but it's not necessarily the stuff we'll be talking about at the end of the tournament. I watched Paola Badosa as well get a really hard-fought win over against Laura Siegmund. You know, a player that 2 years ago she beats comfortably when she's feeling good and is in form and confident. A bit like the Rudes and Berrettini on the men's side. You know, you've got certain players that are just trying to rediscover what they're capable of, and she had to deal with, you know, a long injury timeout when she was 3-love up. Siegmund does do that quite a lot now. It may have been a legitimate injury, but it was a bit of a coincidence, it felt like, that she did that. She won through, and then she had a match point against Elena Rybakina, didn't quite get it done. But look at all these players that are meeting so early in the tournament. You just mentioned Runa against Fritz, and today we've got Barbora Krejčíková against Aryna Sabalenka. I mean, we're only halfway through the event, and you've got two of the best players in the world playing against each other.
Yeah, and that's the third Masters, third WTA 1000 event in a row where Krejčíková and Sabalenka will have played, because they met in Dubai and Krejčíková won. They met in Indian Wells and Sabalenka won. So sort of fascinating to see which direction that rivalry goes. And I think that's exactly what we need. We need big matches between big players happening regularly. You know, it'd be nice if it was happening in the latter stages of this tournament, because they feel like two of the very best players in the world. But great that it's happening. And I caught up on the match that David mentioned between Belosa and Rybakina, and wow, I mean, the way Rybakina went from making a lot of errors in the first two sets to suddenly just cutting them all out and redlining her game when she needed to, match point down, she had a forehand winner, and then barely missed another shot for the rest of the match. She was up to 60 winners in three sets, and just her composure and her ability to consistently hit the ball so hard but to big targets, I think that's what sort of separates her from others. And Belosa was sort of gesturing to her team that she felt like Rybakina was just sort of blindly hitting winners and maybe getting a little bit lucky. I think it was just pure frustration of being so close to winning a big match and having it just sort of taken from her. But Rybakina now has won, I think, 10 in a row and is just in superb form.
Magda Linette, an Australian Open semi-finalist, of course, just correcting my error from around 7 minutes ago now. She is probably going to lose. She is 1-5, love 40. Or certainly going to lose this set, I would confidently predict, against Jessica Pegula. Who knows what will happen in the remainder of the match. Winner of that to face Anna Potapova, who beat Zhongxin Wen in the previous round. Not really happening for Zhongxin Wen this season, is it? I think she was my shooting star for the year.
Yeah, I recall that.
I mean, look, it's early days, but
by the way, Anastasia Potapova is putting some wins together. I mean, she beat Coco Gauff in the previous match to that. I watched all of that. And she's really playing the best tennis of her career right now, I think, but being much more reliable at this level. I mean, I did think that Coco Gauff was the story of it, though. She looked so lost particularly on the forehand side. It's pretty dispiriting, actually, seeing that match from her side of the court. You know, I think most people want to see Coco Gauff be a massive factor at the top end of the game, and she may well be that, but crikey, I can't remember seeing a player with a weakness like that, for, you know, who's at the very top for a long time.
If she doesn't sort it out, David, and it sounds like, from what we hear from people that know better than us about the technical side of the game, sorting it out means really seriously potentially taking some time off and making some structural changes to that shot, which is not easy to do in tennis, muscle memory, all the rest of it. If she doesn't, and that is a huge if, do you see her achieving the potential that has been predicted in her by pretty much everybody in tennis, given that she's still only 19, she has already reached a Grand Slam final? How worried are you that she doesn't kick on from that if she doesn't sort that shot out?
Pretty worried for her, because I think the predictions all came from achieving some pretty special stuff when she was just 15 and 16 years of age. I mean, that was such a young age, and probably unfair at the time for us to go as doolally about it as we all did, me included. And look, I still picked her to win Miami because I liked the sort of points on offer for her, and I am I'm also such a believer in her as a competitor, as an athlete. I mean, some of the retrieving she did against Potapova was just insane. Her court coverage is off the charts. I would say the best in the sport. And her backhand is world class. So there's some seriously good stuff in her game. But I just don't think you can do it on the backhand side if you've got a good enough slice. You can cover it up to some degree. You can't do it on the forehand. You can see the contact goes. She starts kind of hitting it half true. She's not really hitting the center of the strings properly when it gets tight and when she's really put under pressure on that side. And I don't think you can get around that. I don't care how good your movement is. And against a player who was inferior to her in many, many other ways, and who also has a dodgy forehand in Potapova, but Goff was, no, I mean, relatively speaking, you know, these were two world-class backhands and two poor forehands. And Goff's, I'm sorry to say, was a liability in the last half of the match. And I don't know whether you can rebuild a shot within a career like this. I mean, how long would you have to take off? I don't know whether it's even possible. Whether you get around it by just getting really confident and using your weapons to cover it up, maybe that's doable. But you compare it to the players you've just mentioned, Sabalenka, Krejcikova, Rybakina, Świątek, they just don't have a weakness like that. So I think she's going to have an excellent career as things stand, but she's not going to be able to rival them at the top of the game with that shot.
Matt, you predicted Krejcikova just on her to win this title, and you did that knowing the draw, knowing that she was due to face Sabalenka in this round if they got there. I know that because I saw you check the draw with my own eyes. How do you feel about that prediction?
I just like the points on offer.
Look at us.
No, that was a dig at David,
Vegas,
by the way.
Vegas has changed him, David.
That was a dig at David.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't think it was, you see. I don't
no,
think it was.
No, mine was a genuinely, I'm looking at the draw, let's try and work this through pick. I guess part of me just thinks, look, Rybakina is playing so well. I just sort of always think it's unlikely that a player will do something as big as the Sunshine Double. You know, it's not been done by that many players in history. It's really hard to do. So I thought, okay, I'll go for someone else. And yeah, I just thought that Krejcikova doesn't mind that matchup with Sabalenka. You know, they had some close matches. And how do I feel about it? Well, that match is tonight, isn't it? So this will be out of date tennis news very soon. But I loved the comments that I read today, I think, on the WTA website from Krejcikova saying, basically, don't forget about me. Like, everyone's talking about Rybakina, everyone's talking about Świątek and Sabalenka, and big three talk is starting. Well, she's saying, I want to be a big four. And I love a player who plays with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I think Krejcikova has kind of always done that in a way. She's very underrated, I think, and she knows it. And she wants people to realise how good she is. So I loved hearing those quotes. I think it feels like a bit of a coin flip match. They're both in great form. But I would probably expect the winner of that to go through to the final, I guess. Am I right in saying that Pegula and Rybakina are on the other half of the draw, that they're both looking, yes, like they might meet, whereas Krejcikova and Sabalenka are the really big inform names in the other half.
So the winner of Sabalenka Krejcikova faces the winner of the match currently on court between Vondrousova and Kisteya. It's on serve at the moment. Who knows what will happen, because Markéta Vondrousova, as we know, is inexplicable as a tennis player. Truly inexplicable. And then above that, we have the winner of Kvitova and Gracheva to face the winner of Katerina Alexandrova and Bianca Andreescu, who's had three big-ish wins. Or I think actually for Andreescu, three big wins, quite frankly.
I think they're big wins. I mean, they're Emma Raducanu, Maria Sakkari, and then the most recent round, Sofia Kenin. And look, Raducanu and Kenin, we know, are far from their peak Grand Slam tournament winning form, but they are players who've done exactly that. They've won Grand Slam tournaments. Sakkari has her struggles, but she did recently reach a semi-final of Indian Wells. She's a top 10 player. And Bianca Andreescu has not been beating players very often. She certainly hasn't been winning three in a row, and players with pedigree like that. And I just think there is plenty of reason to be optimistic because of these wins. She needed wins like these. She needed moments that reminded her how good she is and how great it feels when you win, and to just feel good about life as a tennis player. I think if she could get on a roll, and this is a bit of a roll, she could be back at the top of the game before you know it, because she's that good. The potential is that high. So I try to be objective a lot of the time about the tennis we watch. I don't feel very objective watching Bianca Andreescu, because I desperately want her to be a factor at the top of the game for years to come. I love watching her play. I like her from what I see and hear, and I hope she is going to keep going.
Especially because when she wins, you get Coco.
The dog.
Coco was on at the Tennis Channel desk this week, and it was a joy to behold.
Bianca,
what a scene stealer.
Bianca was asked to introduce her, and she said, "She needs no introduction."
So great.
They call themselves by first names, don't they? Bianca, just at Bianca. That's it. At Coco. Yeah.
Imagine being able to do that. So, yeah, Alexandrova next for Andreescu. And Luke David, as you say, she's a role player, isn't she? Three back-to-back wins. Can't remember the last time she achieved that. This is already a mini role. And I do like the idea of, you know, the WTA dressing room, which is filled with a lot of players that have won Grand Slams, players that have proven they've got it at the top of the game but just aren't doing it right now at that very, very top. I do like the idea of that cohort of players hearing the post Indian Wells chat about a big three and going, hang on a minute. I'm here.
I can beat this lot.
Screw your big three. Yeah, I'm here for that. I know Andreescu hasn't said it out loud, but we know that she believes in herself. She kind of did say it earlier in the season, didn't she? That she sees those women at the top of the game and feels like she belongs there. So, that's what I'm picturing in my mind. Them all getting together sort of Power Rangers style and going, no big three.
And something that Andreescu has said out loud this week is just how much better she feels on court generally. She actually mentioned her run to the Miami final in 2021, which is not a result that sticks in my mind. She had to retire in that final against Ash Barty, and she'd really sort of struggled through the tournament, but kind of in classic Andreescu style. You know, that was her thing at the time, wasn't it? Just winning so many improbable matches. But she said she felt horrible on court during that run and wasn't enjoying it, and, you know, ended up having a really tough season, took a break. And she just said now, 2 years on in Miami, she just feels better, and she's got a sort of, you know, a reference point, and in herself she feels better, and that's really encouraging. And if she can then bring somewhere close to her best tennis as well, absolutely sign me up to the Andreescu fan club that I think we're all in.
We're in it. Should say, by the way, didn't mention that, I mean, most of you probably know this, Noa Świątek in Miami, she withdrew ahead of time due to that rib injury, which she had mentioned after her loss to Rybakina in Indian Wells. We now know it's caused by a bad cough.
Ow.
There we go.
Put your rib out with a bad cough. Ugh.
I'm pleased. I mean, as I see Stefanos Tsitsipas live on my screen right now in the Tennis Channel studio, I'm pleased she's not playing injured, because she doesn't need to. You know, even if it is only a minor injury, minor injuries can become more. Tennis is relentless. Just take the time that you need, as much as, you know, the draw would be enriched by her being there. I'm okay with her getting herself right for the clay court season. And I think at this stage of proceedings, I think that's probably, I mean, I could update you on some things that will very definitely be out of date by the time anybody's listening to this, but I think that's about it for where we are right now with Miami. We'll be back midweek, won't we? And we'll, of course, be back at the end of the week to wrap up what we've seen and heard. And hopefully I'll have nuggets from the ground because whilst I've only seen this hotel room, there's a whole world out there. And I will be seeing and hearing things from the tournament, hopefully. Some news away from Miami that just dropped in our inboxes today. Andy Murray has joined the management company IMG on a long-term deal, with IMG acting as his exclusive commercial representatives and managing his career in conjunction with his longtime manager, Matt Gentry. And this move means the dissolution to some extent of Andy Murray's management company, the one that he and Matt Gentry started together, 77 Management. This is, I mean, I know this is very, very sort of niche insidery tennis news, but for those niche insidery people, this is quite interesting, David.
Yeah, and normally we wouldn't break or cover news of a player's movement between management companies. That's not, it's not really that interesting to the vast majority of listeners. It's not even that interesting to us a lot of the time, but this is interesting. I mean, yes, they're disbanding our Andy Murray's agency 77. They're disbanding the tennis division completely. They are continuing their representation of footballers, which they have among their number Caroline Weir from Real Madrid, and a number of male footballers as well, Ryan Porteous from Watford, Jack Harkness from Rangers. But their tennis division, which included Andy Murray, obviously, at the forefront of it, and other British players, Katie Swan, Harriet Dart, Paul Jubb, Aidan McHugh, they're going to be looking for alternate representation. I know that 77 under Matt's guidance is going to be helping them try to find some new representation. But I think the reason this is significant is because this was Andy Murray's kind of baby, really, from when he won Wimbledon in 2013, so nearly 10 years ago. He and Matt named this agency 77 because it was 77 years since a British man had won Wimbledon, last man being Fred Perry. And so they started this agency. He'd previously been with 19 Entertainment, run by Simon Fuller, you know, the people who run X Factor and all that sort of thing, and Matt was working for them. And they went out on their own and they created this agency to, I think, considerable success in terms of it becoming a boutique agency which represented Murray and sort of created his brand. He got his own logo. He got his own. He's got his own clothing label with Castore, who have now branched out into football as well and become quite big players in the Premier League. And he always struck you as the one of the big four that went out and did his own thing. He wasn't with the big agency. He was creating his own thing. And he was also looking at the afterlife of a tennis player, wanting to be a mentor to other athletes. And certainly when those other players that I mentioned, Harriet Dart, Katie Swan, Paul Jubb, were signing up, they all referenced Andy Murray being a part of the appeal of it, of having the chance to have his ear, to have his advice. He spoke a lot about that too. So this is kind of significant in as much as, well, what does it mean for that? Does Andy Murray, is he moving in a different direction altogether? I suspect not. I suspect he will still want to do those kind of things, but maybe in a different way. I don't know that for a fact. But the fact is he's joined IMG because they are pretty much sure things commercially. And you look at players that have had careers that have extended beyond tennis, like Maria Sharapova, Lina, several others that Max Eisenbud, the IMG head, has been influential with. He's now got Andy Murray, and I suppose I think it's a bit of a shame in a way that 77 in tennis is not going to be a thing anymore, because I liked the idea of it. I like the idea of Andy Murray being a guide for players. But when you look at those players that they'd signed up, I had a look at their rankings when they first joined the agency and now, and they're not that different. They haven't gone up that much. And the truth is, it's really hard commercially to make big deals for players that are ranked 130 or 150. We often hear about players, how it's there's not that many players making a lot of money. I think all those players are doing fine from being top five British players, and they'll have earned good money as prize money at various points and for being part of the Billie Jean King Cup team and all that sort of thing. But you're not going to be bringing in big sponsor endorsements. So I imagine it was probably quite difficult to really make a go of that. Just shows that Andy Murray's he's looking further afield. So many of them end up at IMG or similar agencies to maximise, especially in the latter stages of their career.
Yeah, and good luck to all those players that with Matt Gentry's help will be looking for alternate representation. And good luck to Andy Murray at the giants that are IMG. I bring you mascot news, folks. Today's mascot is Poppy. And Poppy is the universe being kind to me because I needed a Bernese Mountain Dog today.
We met one, didn't we, in Australia, Catherine?
On my Vegas come down. We met two, David.
Yes.
We met two. Well, you observed two. I sort of dived head first into two. you don't see two Bernese Mountain Dogs very often. When the opportunity arises, David, you've got to grab it with both hands. Poppy is 8 years old, loves cuddling, chatting, eating, and long naps, and she's owned by Elizabeth Desmond. Poppies are one of my favourite flowers, and Bernese Mountain Dogs are one of my favourite dogs, and needless to say, I love Poppy so much. So thank you, Elizabeth, for sending her to me today. I needed that. I also bring you competition news. You might remember that we were running an incredible competition in conjunction with On Location and Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours to win a trip to Indian Wells next year to see all four semi-finals, men's and women's, and both finals, hotel stay included, transportation to and from the venue. An incredible prize package. And it has been won by Ron Buckmeyer from Los Angeles, California. And we met Ron, didn't we, at the Steve Fergal's booth in Indian Wells. And we remember Ron because his socks matched his the trim on his branded Tennis Podcast top, and I remember that, and I'm very, very pleased for Ron.
Yeah,
and he had Billie Jean King style matching glasses, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a cool cat and a really nice chap as well, and one of so many lovely people that we had the chance to meet. And yeah, he's going to be back, and he's going to be back in style. So delighted for him.
Yeah, so pleased for Ron. You've won a competition, and you've been called a cool cat by David Law.
Yeah, I'm not sure that really...
First person ever, I think, maybe, to be called a cool cat by David.
Big day for Ron.
I've never used the expression before, Ron, so, you know. I don't know whether you should take that as a compliment or an insult.
And that's it, I think, for this tennis podcast. Only to tell you that we have our mascots. David has Maisie. I've got Xenia. Matt has Darwin. We still have all of our skin in the Miami game?
No, we don't.
I think.
I've lost Coco
no?
Gauff.
Oh, Coco Gauff.
But I'm still, you know, dining out on my Donna Vekic and Carlos Alcaraz wins that have taken me into second place.
Mm. Matt and I still have mucho skin in the Miami game. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Miss that face. Yeah, miss that face. We'll be seeing it in a week's time. We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Dorinda, who is originally from Melbourne, but now living in Connecticut.
All right, Dorinda.
Hello, Dorinda. I've been to Melbourne and not Connecticut.
I've Same. Been to Connecticut, I think.
Ooh. Have you?
I think.
Clearly memorable, David.
Yeah. I think I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Dorinda.
Thank you, Dorinda, yeah.
We've also got Anne from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello, Anne. Are we talking Anne with or without an E?
Without. So I think this is
same church, same pew as my middle name.
Whitaker heavy shout out.
Yes, because my brother lived for a year in Albuquerque and my parents visited him there. In fact, I'm the only of the Whitaker nucleus family that hasn't been to Albuquerque. There's some Whitaker trivia for you.
It's tough to spell Albuquerque, isn't it?
Yes.
Yep, probably not great radio to do it either.
I'm just trying to do it in my head, but I can't figure it out. Anyway,
I think the key is that it's Albu, A-L-B-U.
Q-U-E-R.
And then, in fact, there's three U's, which must
well,
be unusual.
While we're there, why don't you just spell it for us, Catherine?
I think it's A-L-B-U-Q-U-E-R-Q-U-E.
Nailed it. Perfection. Great radio.
Sorry, everybody.
Thank you, Anne.
And finally, we've got Chris Tate, who is from Toronto.
All right, Chris.
Toronto. They don't say the second T, do they?
Don't they?
It's soft. I learned that from the film Argo.
Oh, why don't they?
Because they're all pretending to be Canadian, aren't they? They give them Canadian passports to get out of Iran. And they have to be told not to say Toronto because true Canadians, they say Toronto. Mm.
Okay.
There you go.
I didn't know that.
Like Chris Lewis of Wimbledon final fame.
I'm impressed.
Have you recently watched that film, Catherine? Because you normally have a different Toronto story for shout outs.
I do, but I always tell people about how I dangled off a building in Toronto.
Well, I know, and I very much enjoy it.
I don't want to put listeners from Toronto off becoming shout out friends. They're like, oh, well, I know exactly what I'll get.
Yeah.
You know, because I've got a deep well of,
give us some more,
of Toronto
Catherine.
Material to draw
line
upon.
Line them up.
Yeah. There'll be others.
Well, I've just given you
that
one.
Great.
Yeah. Well,
just given you one.
That's good for today, yeah.
And Chris says that he's had the honour of meeting both Catherine and David at the US Open last year. He says, I snuck up on Catherine as she was preparing for what turned out to be Serena's final match. And a few days later, I ran into Reed accosted David, who was towering above the crowd during the changeover from day to night sessions.
That's what he does.
Oh, yeah. So it's what I'm all about, Chris.
That's what David does. Chris, you've had the full David Law experience. thank you for being a friend. Thank you to all of you for being a friend. If you'd like to become a friend, get yourself a shout out or an intro, or just be in the Tennis Podcast friends family, then do that. And the details of how to do that are in our show notes, as are our details of how you can subscribe to the newsletter, which you absolutely should do. Head to our social media, our Instagram, our Twitter, our TikTok that has no material on there, but, you know, work in progress. subscribe to it to encourage us to use it, maybe. And our YouTube channel, same applies.
We know that one has stuff on. I've been working on
that
it.
That has stuff on it. Yeah, that has stuff on it. And we'll be back with you midweek for more from Miami. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.